Hey Bulls Nation, welcome to another episode of the Rebuildable Podcast. I'm your host Matt Gentile, and we're coming off the heels of a very impressive Bulls win, albeit against a very subpar Atlanta Hawks team. But the Bulls right now are at 9-17. Some of the questions that we had a week ago in our last episode still remain about Jim Boylen, the rotation, but we have seen a little bit better performance from Lauri Markkanen so far through December. But then we saw some reports recently. Want to get to a Chicago Sun-Times report from Joe Cowley about Thaddeus Young. And I'm really excited because we're going to have C-Dub from the Bow on Bulls podcast to talk about this. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you got to do that right now. He's a great follow, especially during a lot of Bulls games. So let's bring him in to talk about the team right now. C-Dub, how's it going? Thanks for coming back on.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me, man. It's a... Appreciate it, you know, to come on the podcast and to be reached out to talk Bulls again.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we had Big Dave on a couple weeks ago, and he joined our three-timers club. So we've had him on three times on the podcast, and I had put his feet to the fire and said, who else should join the three-timers club? And we've had a couple people on twice, C-Red Fred, Matt Peck, a couple other people. And he said, you know, I don't want to cause any harm there, but I'm going to recommend that you bring my guy C-Dub on from Ball on Bulls. And I said, yeah, done. And, you know, you guys were great. You had come on once before on the Grading Guard Pack series. I was like, it's a no-brainer. And you were on my short list to have on this season, but you can thank Big Dave for you being on this soon.
Oh, I'm glad I'm on somebody's list. That's great. How long is your short list?
My short list? Well, you know what? It's probably like five people. So you were on that short list, yeah.
Probably number four or five right there.
No, I'd say you were a solid three. And maybe I might not be telling the truth, but you'll never know.
I'll take that.
I mean, you've always been one of my favorites. Been listening to Ball on Bulls for a while, even before Big Dave became a celebrity all of a sudden. Yeah. Let me ask you about that. How's that been with the podcast? Before we get into some Bulls talk here, how's that been with your podcast with Big Dave getting his gig on, you know, Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago? Has it helped to grow the number of listeners you've had to the podcast?
You know what? Not really. It's been pretty steady the last year. And what I noticed over the years of doing a podcast, at least our podcast, you know, this is ours, that the listenership grows, you know, growth depends on how the team is doing during the year. Mm. We've had the lowest numbers when the team sucks. When Derrick Rose years, the numbers were way higher. Yeah, so it's like, because like, honestly, like, the Bulls aren't good. And I don't care how famous Dave is. No one wants to listen to how bad the Bulls are over and over again. We just did a podcast with Dre from According to Sources. I got Dre. And when he comes on, it's always fun. But we bash the Bulls. After a while, you know, it's like, how many times, how many ways can you destroy the Bulls? I guess you can a lot of ways. But after a while, I guess, you know, you just kind of, you know, go to humdrum a little bit. So
you guys were on, you know, and sort of the infancy of when Bulls podcasts became a thing. Like, I think you guys were some, like, you know, there was Doug Tonis that was part of the initial rotation I know I would listen to, and then it was yours. So, like, it's just funny that, like, Bulls podcasts have just popped up since then. But you guys were around way before that.
Yeah, you know, Dave and I, you know, I know Dave and I go back to high school, actually. So, you know, ever since high school, we had a pretty good, a close friendship, you know, because we pretty much kind of like the same things. We had the same temperament and everything. So, you know, he's my, you know, my good friend. So it makes the podcast easy to do. So we are allowed to, you know, so it's easy to get on a podcast once a week with him, because we used to have all these arguments. I should, you know, with your friends about the Bulls or the Bears, whatever. It's like these conversations are golden and funny. Like, why shouldn't you not record these things? We had another friend that said that. Said, man, you guys are funny. I just listen to you guys talk Bulls all the time. Y'all guys should record and do a podcast. But it took a couple of years for us to, like, you know, sort of like fill out what we want to do and how to do it. And I'm pretty tech literate of the two of us. But, you know, it's, you know, we haven't done it before. As you know, getting started and doing something a little different takes a little bit, you know, it takes a, mm-hmm. you know, that extra step over the hump to like actually do it. And once you do it, you get the kinks out, and then you know, ball just keeps rolling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hence, you know, all that, mm-hmm. and it's all that said is that, you know, Big Dave is on TV and his fame because Big Dave is a very talented individual, very talented. But it's really cool to see, and we talk about this all the time, to see the journey. Like, I know how he got on that show. It didn't just happen last week or last year. Mm-hmm. It happened like 10 years ago, you know? That's how it started, and the connections we made, and the friendships, like you know, with other podcasts like yourself. All that is part of the journey that led him to be on Outsiders on TV. Mm-hmm. I see that. If you're a fan, it looks like he got on like 2 weeks ago. But I know the process, the connections we made over the years, you know, the successes, the failures, and the good fortune, you know, the great people. See Ray Frey, helped him a lot. You know, told him about the audition for the show, the Outsiders show, all that. You know, Super Fred was one of our inspirations to do the ball on Bulls podcast because Dave had ran into him, I believe, at a job or something like that. And they had shared a hatred for Kirk Heinrich. And after that bond and the love for Ben Gordon, you know, Dave found out he was doing a podcast. And we had been talking about doing a podcast. So Dave, we went out to Fred, see Super Fred do his podcast, a sports podcast. And it was like, no, we could do this. We could do this. Because we had done a podcast before. Briefly mm-hmm. with music, but not sports. Mm-hmm. But that sort of kicked it off a little bit, you know, just, you know, meeting people and this, you know, starting on this little journey of ours.
Well, I could tell you, like, just as a fan, the conversations you guys have, it is like when you sit with your friend at like, you know, a bar and just chat about the Bulls and chat about sports. It reminds me so much of that. When you guys came on to do Grading Guard Packs, it was both of you for that era of, you know, the D Rose era. It was probably one of the funnest I had doing an episode. And I've now done like 30-something episodes here. And I'm not even lying. That was my favorite episode by far to do.
I appreciate that, man.
I've said this to Dave before, too. Both of you know how to do like a normal conversation. And you know this from podcasting. Like sometimes you have to sort of, if you're hosting, you got to carry it a little bit. You got to do more Q&A style. But I almost felt like with you guys, I could just sit there and shoot the shit with you guys. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm glad to say that. So, you know, wonderful thing to hear. You know, one of the things Dave and I, you know, always pride ourselves on outside of, you know, the podcast is have this this sort of outlook of just being yourself. Like it shouldn't have to, you know, every podcast is different. You know, not all podcasts are alike. They will be boring, right? But we try to be a kind of, you know, cheesy word to say, authentic. That is, don't try too hard to be a podcaster. Just talk. You know, that the way we talk on a podcast is how we talk. When we ride into the game, see the game together, or, you know, we at the bar or something like that, always watching, you know, sitting down watching the game on a Friday night, whatever like that. That's how we talk. We talk like we're friends, you know. Mm-hmm. And we don't try to put on airs about, you know, and another thing we don't edit our show. Like, we don't edit out. We don't edit, you know, mistakes out, stats, when stats go wrong, we don't edit that. We add out things we're not supposed to say that we know about. But besides that, so that's sort of how we're trying to bring our authenticity to the podcast. It's not try to you know, shape it too much or mold it too much. Just let it be what it is and let our personalities be what it is and let our friendship show out on a podcast.
Before we get to some Bulls talk here, just for listeners, where can they follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at BallSports1. That's B-A-W-L Sports1. Dave is on Ball Sports, so that's Dave. I'm with the one on the end of it. And Dave has to make Outsiders banner on his. And I don't know what I have in mind. Oh, D-Rose? I think we got D-Rose on my ass or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, I try to tweet. I don't tweet too often, but I tweet. I hate tweet during the game, the Bulls game. Mm-hmm. I try to balance it out. Let me ask you, how do you balance out? Like, do you tweet a lot during the games?
So I keep my tweets during the games to a minimum. And actually, before you came on, I said, you got to follow C-Dub, especially during games. Because you've actually made a lot of... I love following you during games. I'm not much of a tweeter during games. I'm not, like... I tweet things here and there if there's something. Like, whenever Coby White gets hot, I tweet a lot because I was big on that draft pick, so I just love to throw it back at people. But for the most part, I keep it pretty quiet during games. I kind of let everybody else do it. I'll retweet great thoughts from games, but not really. But yeah, no, your tweets are great during games. I definitely encourage our listeners to give you a follow and listen to some of that, because some of the observations you make are hysterical or just, I think, honest.
Yeah, they really got on me hard because I used to tweet a lot, then I stopped. So I just fell in love with Twitter and tweeting in general, you know. Mm-hmm. But this year I picked it back up. I promised I'd pick it back up. I would pick it back up, and I'm enjoying myself with tweeting on the games, getting my thoughts out, inventing, and also saying, you know, other people's thoughts too as well. Twitter's weird, man. It's like you get this, you know, you tweet out a thought that everyone's thinking, but you say it, and everyone likes that you said it because they didn't say it, and you get a serotonin hit because people like what you tweeted.
Oh yeah, it's the essence of Twitter. I mean that. And it's like, sometimes though you can end up down a rabbit hole though. I feel like you can get into like a really dark spot where you can go on a complete just string of ranting tweets. I've done that a lot this year with the Bulls. I've had moments where I've ranted a lot about Jim Boylan.
Oh, Jim Boylan. There's nothing good to say about Jim Boylan in Chicago right now.
I was going to say, we'll get to him. I want to actually though start real quick because we're 26 games into this, 9-17. I think a lot of Bulls fans were excited about this season, thought this could be a chance to compete for a playoff spot. That is a really soft beginning to the schedule, and yet here we are, under 500, and there's a lot of question marks. What do you think has gotten them to this point so far? Because it seems like there's a lot, but what do you think is the biggest reason they're at 9-17?
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons why. And the biggest reason why, I think people expect me to say Jim Boylan, but I'm going to say something different. I think it's Lauri Markkanen. Mm. You know, I stand by when I say, you know, your team was as good as your, you know, best two players. And coming to the season, we all thought Lauri Markkanen would get better. And it's interesting because when he got drafted, I didn't like the pick too much. Now my brother watches a lot of college basketball. He said, "Call me." I was a little man. I was like, "Man, I want a Monk. I don't know. I want a Monk." He's like, "No, dude." He said, "Look, man, Lowry. Trust me. I watched him play. Lowry can ball." I said, "I whatever, he can ball." Then John Paxson got interviewed and asked about what the market can bring, and John Paxson just said, "Oh, we need a tall guy, basically a tall guy to spread the floor, shoot threes in the corner. They get they receive passes for the point guard." I'm paraphrasing, but that's pretty much what he said. That Lauri Markkanen is going to be a tall guy that can spread the floor and get passes for point guard and shoot open threes. That's it. Fast forward, it's like we expect Lauri Markkanen to be like the second coming of Dirk or something. It's like, well, it wasn't like he was expected to be Dirk. Now, he saw flashes of what he could be. He saw flashes of what that ceiling could be. But really, he wasn't drafted to be that. Now, can he be that? I don't think he can. But he's sucked this year. And mm-hmm. I think the number of reasons why he sucked, you could mention injuries. I know coming into the season, his big thing, as you probably know, was that he wanted to play all these games. I want to play 83 games or whatever. I want to play the whole season. Because he's missed a lot of games. And he wouldn't make the point of actually being on the floor for his team. So he may be paying a little hurt, which is fine. I'm sure all players play hurt to a certain extent. But he looks, you know, there's a difference between being hurt and seeing the guy still play well while they hurt. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could tell who could have a game who's hurt. Like, man, he wasn't hurt. He would have dropped this, blah, blah, blah. But he had a good game. You know, you don't get that from Lauri. And some of his comments at the game about, you know, he had a comment earlier this year that made me irate. Dave texted me about him being interviewed after the game and saying something about, "I know you guys expect me to drop 22 points and 10 rebounds or whatever, but I'm, you know, I'm trying to win or whatever." And I'm like, when I heard that, I'm like, oh, he don't have that mentality. He's not yet. It's not there. Like, you want to be a role player. You want to be a player that's a part of winning basketball, but not a reason why you won. You know, a reason why you're playing winning basketball. You know, being a part of winning basketball, that's role player's role. When you went up on the podium, you know, before the season was Zach LaVine. And Zach LaVine was talking about how we two people that the other team's game plan for. And he was up there talking about you're going to be an all-star and all that kind of stuff. That's not what those players do. They say, you know, they don't say, oh, I'm not trying to score 22 points. You know, you can't have that, can't say that during a press conference, you know, during before the season, and then like during the season, act like you want to be a regular role player. No, you have to score to win. You get paid. It's hard to score in the NBA. You get paid to score the ball. That's where the money goes. Not being a role player and running around being part of winning. If you're the second best player on the team, you have to play like that. You have to act like that. You have to have the mentality like that. And if your second best player is not playing well and is sucking as bad as Lowry has all season, you're not going to have a good winning season. Now, with that said, Boylan has sucked because he's coached a different team than what he has. I don't know what he saw about benching freaking Daniel Gafford. I don't get it. All his arguments, I don't get it. It's like he saw a different team out there than what he had. like this fairy tale out there running around thinking like he had some kind of like Houston Rocket team or something like that. I have no clue.
I do want to get into just the issues with Boylan, because there's a lot there. And you know, you're bringing up like the rotations and everything, and there seems to be a lot of stubbornness. But before I do, I want to just touch on a couple of things you said about Lauri Markkanen. What I think is boggled me is, yeah, even if injuries were an issue, there's always been this lack of aggression that Lauri just doesn't have. And you mentioned this. He seems to me, he always has seemed to me, like a guy you win with, not because of. And I feel like you could be an all-star in this league and not necessarily be a guy that you win because of. You know, like, I see him as a guy that is always going to be on the fringe. You know, he's always going to flirt with being an all-star. There might be some years where he makes an all-star team, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're a superstar. I don't know if I'm making sense, but
yeah, I think you're right. There are the Jimmy Butler's, like, say Jimmy Butler's kind of tier. Jimmy Butler's not going to pretty much lead his team to a championship by being the best player on the team. He's a very good player, and we kid him on our podcast, make fun of him a lot, but he's a very good damn player. But I don't think you're going to win a lot. You know, even Lauri in Toronto, right? You know, it's a good team with him, but you're not going to win a championship just because he's on your team. He's going to win a championship because Kawhi Leonard came on your team. So yeah, you're right. Sean Marion, there are a lot of all-stars out there that play well. And that's what I mean. Like, Lauri's not even at that level where he looks like he should almost be an all-star. He's not at the Luol Deng level, right? Luol Deng, barely made the all-star team. He made one by default because somebody got injured or something. You know what I'm saying? He's not even at that. And you brought up a good point about the mentality about it. You know, I don't understand, like, how can you – and plus, like, you know, I harp on this all the time. We watch tape of him overseas. And it's overseas, I get it. I get it's different. But his mentality, he was dunking on people and looking at them, staring them down. Yeah, what? Fading away on people talking trash. It's on film. This dude has a different mentality, a dog mentality overseas. He gets in the NBA, he cowers. Like, it's like he came – bring it over to the NBA, that confidence. And you can't really teach confidence. You know what I'm saying? Like, like his game doesn't look developed. Like, he still can dribble more than 5 times without being uncomfortable. Like, I thought at this point I would see you be a better ball handler. That have that happened. Right? I thought I would see you be a bad post-up player. He's become a worse post-up player. He doesn't even want to post-up. You know, he still throws up kind of weak shots around the basket. He's not crafty enough around the basket. He has a certain set of shots he uses, the drive step, you know. But he doesn't – it's like, are you improving your game over this? I don't know. I don't know, man. Like, and you can still do all that without that killer mentality, right? Like you said. But I don't see it there. I don't see him that I want to win. Like, man, Lowry wants to win. Like, you've seen bad players do it all the time, right? It's like, this dude want to win, but he sucks. Something is not there.
Yeah, and right now, through 6 games so far in December, he's gotten a little bit better. He's averaging about 18, shooting a lot better from the 3-point line. I think that was the one thing that just took me by surprise. November and October, I mean, he's shooting well under career averages, and it's like year 3 is usually the year when it's all supposed to click. So I think it was such a shock coming out of the gate like that.
Yeah, he does rely on 3 a lot, and Another thing that's upsetting about this team is that they clearly are instructed to shoot a shit. I'm sorry, curse. Can I curse on this podcast?
Oh, absolutely.
A shitload of threes. And it was so bad to the point teams were leaving large open. You saw that, right? It was like, let him shoot it. Let him shoot it. He's not going to do anything else. But you know what? If you can't shoot, go to the damn post, bro. You're 7 foot tall. You're 7 foot tall. Like, your team doesn't even look for you in the post against smaller players. And you don't act like you want the ball. You have to act like you want the ball. Then they give you the ball. But they're not going to respect you enough to give you the ball if you don't actually want the ball. He don't want it. I'm going to take my three myself. Because he already want it. Right? I'm not giving the ball to post because he doesn't really want it. You know, like the switches and stuff. It's maddening. He's 7 foot tall. And all he wants to do is shoot threes. Like, if you can't shoot threes, not on your game, get in the post, do something, draw fouls. Because every time he takes a shot, it's kind of awkward because he's kind of tall. Because he's 7 foot tall. He's hard to guard. You will most likely foul him. And he goes to the line a lot when he actually gets aggressive in the game. And I don't know if that's coaching. You know, talk to Kendall Gill about that and a couple other people about that. Like, is that a result of bad coaching? Is that just Laurie not being aggressive? As many put on the coach a little bit, not much on Lowry. I put a lot on Lowry, but it's weird.
No, and I think it's actually a little bit of both. You know, like, you have that guy that doesn't have that gene, that killer gene. Is it then on the coach to say, hey, you know what? We got to get the ball into inside to him early, create some mismatches for him, you know, get him into a rhythm to start the game so that way his confidence gets up. Do you think that maybe is something Jim Boylan and the coaching staff, you know, need to do more of? It seems like they're doing it a little bit now, but, you know, earlier in the season, should they have been trying to do that more and more?
The action for the coach to make the players play better and help them out. Yes, do that. I'm pretty sure if you talk to Jim Boylan, he would say, oh, you run a lot of plays for Lowry. There are plenty of options in the offense for him to score, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, but they're running this equal opportunity offense and with guys. You know, offense isn't geared toward your best players. Early in the season, it's hard for Lowry to score a lot of points if he's on the bench for in the last 3 minutes of the first quarter and then plays 30 minutes a game. Finally, lately, Boylan's been playing these players like they're 20-something-year-olds instead of like they're like 35 or 38-year-olds. They're playing a lot more minutes, which is something you should have done earlier, coaching. You know, understanding, you know, the team you have on the floor, you know, starting Luke Kornet, off the bench over Gafford is ridiculous. When you constantly after the game literally say, we need rebounding and defense. And the guy that plays that rebounds and plays defense, you're not playing. You put him in the G League for some reason. That's coaching. Mm-hmm. That's how do you see Gafford in practice and constantly start Luke Kornet off the bench first? And I'm not even saying Luke Kornet shouldn't play. He should. But why is he not spending time with them at least? What team did he see come into the season? Like that team he saw come into the season, that's not the team he has. And that's bad evaluation.
Well, and it's so weird because I think when you saw Gafford step into action in preseason, and I get it, it's preseason basketball, but you really did see the difference between him and Luke Kornet. You saw a guy that comes in there with energy and a guy that really, you know, when you take Wendell Carter out of the game, you don't lose anything in terms of rim protection. And so it baffled my mind when he decided to roll with Luke Kornet as long as he did.
Well, Boylan loves threes. Mm-hmm. Luke Kornet spreads the floor. The GM loves threes. I don't know. I guess they don't like points, but like, I guess they like threes in general. I don't know. It's weird. I have no answer for that.
I mean, it's really strange because wasn't this the same guy last year who basically turned the offense into something from like 1995 when they were just throwing it into the post? They're throwing it into Robin Lopez, it seemed like, every game. And now all of a sudden it's like they got to take a certain number of threes a game. I mean, he's very hard to read, Jim Boylan. Like, I can't figure him out.
Yeah, I remember a couple of key questions we had. I had come in the year was, when Jim Boylan was the defensive coach under Hoiberg. And this is when he was defensive coach. We would have podcasts and we'd be like, why the players don't know what to do on defense? They call timeouts, they're a little lost on defense, and they literally did not know what to do at times on defense. If you watch them play with Hoiberg, like they would get lost. And I was like, that's Boylan, he's not good. Then they got rid of Hoiberg and promoted the guy that coached a bad defense to be the head coach. So then my question was, okay, we don't know his offensive game. Maybe he's – we kind of know where he is defensively as a coach, right? Yells. I still think players, like you see, out of position, don't know what to do. But my big question was, okay, what does he have offensively to offer? And this was the year, a full season, to show what he can present to the team offensively. And you see off the start. You saw off the start, bad. Hmm. Bad. Like, how do you have Wendell Carter, like, this has to be coaching. Wendell Carter constantly passes up 10 footers for threes.
Yes.
Like, at some point, that had to be drilled in his head. That had to be. Because if you play basketball, I don't care what generation you are. Let's just, you're not a big man. It's a big man. You're not passing up those 10-foot shots. Like, mm-hmm. especially if they're mostly open. You see players literally pass up jump shots for threes. Yeah, and that has to stop. And yeah. you see it over and over again. And where did you have this team at? Did you have this team going to the playoffs? Like, what record?
So I had this team before coming into the season. I think during my projection show, I said anywhere from like 35 to 38. I thought they'd be flirting with the eighth seed. I think I kind of compared them to last year's Sacramento Kings team. You know, they were like that Kings team in the West. They were flirting with getting that final spot. They ultimately down the stretch couldn't do it, but you saw a lot of progress, a lot of growth. That's kind of what I thought with this Bulls team. I thought maybe they were 1 year away from contending for the postseason. Had everything gone right, if Laurie and, you know, Zach were all stars, I could have seen them into, you know, seen them get in the playoffs. What about you? Where did you see them coming into this year?
So initially I had them barely making the playoffs. Mm. But then I questioned before the season. I said, well, how does a team that won 20-something games jump up like 12? That's a lot of wins to jump up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, that's a lot of wins. Like, you know, is Laurie and Zach going to be that much better? So I allowed room for them not to be that good, but I didn't think they would be this bad. Mm. I just did not. I just did not. And now I'm hearing articles about how Ryan Storff is pissed off about the, you know, shouldn't know the topic we'll talk, you want to talk about is the fans. Oh, not showing up to the games. You know, I don't know, man. It's hard to see this team continuing either with the same head coach or without changes in the front office.
And I think it all goes, you know, sort of hand in hand. Like, you know, the reason that they're here is because they decided not to do that type of coaching search. To actually bring in probably a coach better suited for this roster, better suited for what they were looking to do. And instead they put in a guy that was just an easy puppet for the organization. And, you know, I wonder, like, how would this team be right now if you had Dave Jaeger, Monty Williams, Luke Walton pulling the strings for the roster? I mean, what do you think? If you had one of those guys in position right now, how would this team be? Would they be that much better?
I don't know much better, but they would have won more than 9 games. I was a big Monty Williams fan. I watched them in New Orleans almost beat the Lakers. I knew they weren't going to beat the Lakers in the playoffs, but they were coached, man. And granted, they had talent, right? You know, but still, you could watch a team and see how the team kind of relates and reacts to the coach and how they play on the floor. That team was well coached. You could tell. So I was a big Monty Williams fan. I know he had a little trouble in his life going on, so yeah, he was a little bit out of it for a couple of years or two. But and Jaeger, you mentioned Jaeger. I think all the coaches would have. I mean, you can't do worse. I mean, like seriously, like you could see teams overachieve or see teams win games they're not supposed to win, or see teams look a certain way. This team doesn't look a certain way. They don't look like they take on an identity. And what I'm hearing is a theme from Jim Boylan. Let me know if this is what you hear. Jim Boylan doesn't really talk anything, say anything much after the game. Talks a lot about emotions or not, whatnot. But he seems to portray this team as a team where you should lower your expectations. I mean, how many times he talks about them like they're like, I don't know, just using analogy, they're like, you know, fifth graders, but at a first grade reading level. Like, you know, it's always like after the press conference, guys, calm down. This team, they can't read yet. We're learning. I know you think they should be able to read by now, but they can't. Trust me on this. They're not that good. But we're taking baby steps to winning. By the way, you won the first quarter. It's like they're talking to him like they're college kids or something. Like they're a team, like he's seeing a team that sucks, and he's telling them it's not my fault. It's their fault. And they're so babies and so young as professional basketball players that they can't win.
Well, and this is interesting that you bring that up. I've kind of noticed the same thing, but prior to the season, you know, him and Garpax got up there and said, this is a team that's ready to compete for a playoff spot. So you can't have it both ways. Like, either you think you got a team. Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like, he kind of talks out of both sides of his mouth a lot. And it just it drives me insane, because that's something you see from the organization a lot, too. Like, we've seen John Paxson do similar things. You know, we saw Gar Foreman do it a couple years ago. We're going to get younger and more athletic, and then all of a sudden, Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade are Chicago Bulls. Like, I feel like there's always a bit of a disconnect when it comes to relaying the message.
Yeah, and yes, I mean, Jim Boylan saying he does the bitch player, then follows it up by bitching a player. That Levine is like, okay. And then you don't hear a lot about him telling the media or the fans that he needs to get better at his job. Once, maybe twice this year, I heard him say something like that to that effect. But I remember when Zach LaVine had a little fallout a couple of games ago, and then he came out with 49 points or whatever. After the press conference, he literally tried to take credit for that. And then, I don't even remember the press conference. He goes, I forgot how he phrased it, but he phrased it in a way like, yeah, he put it away like I did what I did. That's why he has 49 points, but he had a great game on his own. I'm like, what the? Really? Tell him, taking credit for that 49 point? Okay, that's really nice. I don't hear a lot of like, I need to do a better job, or falling on the sword. You know, describe a play that you drew up that was wrong. Like, I drew a bad play up out of bounds. There's something, some coaching nugget besides, you know, playing hard and being down for him and whatever, or, you know, spirit and whatever he said. It's like, I want to hear some X's or O's. I want to hear some, you know, I want to hear something from you that says that you understand that you are the coach and mostly responsible for a bad team. It's partly your fault. And stop talking to us like this team is a bunch of high schoolers pretending to be NBA players. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little weird, man.
Yeah, he spews a lot of cliches. I kind of like it was fun and cute last year because, you know, it was just kind of this weird oddball, but now that you have to hear it every single night, it just gets irritating. I'm curious what you think. There's a report that came out just before we hopped on from Joe Colley of the Chicago Sun-Times. Now, Joe Colley reports sometimes it's always hard to know whether or not they're 100% accurate or true. But this one was a little interesting. It was about Thaddeus Young being a little upset with his role right now off the bench, and there's sort of hints in there that if things don't change, or if he doesn't get an increased role, maybe breaking into the starting lineup somehow, that he might try to seek a trade. Now, again, it's a Joe Colley report. I'm just advising you Bulls fans of that. But I'm curious what you think. What's your reaction to it? Is there anything that you can do to kind of make sure this doesn't get out of control?
Well, first reaction is that what position does he want to play? The small four, awesome. And the third reaction is that now I have his stats up right on my screen here. I'm like, yeah, he did score more points. So, because, you know, let me see. Let's see. Last year, Indiana, 12.6, 27, 2018, 11.8, 11, 15, 14, 13. So he's around that area. But the difference is that, guess how many minutes he played with Indiana, Brooklyn, and Toronto? 30. He is down to 21.6 minutes. So he's not like 80 years old. again, play your good players a lot of minutes on the floor. Play the young players, the best players, and play your better players. Mm-hmm. Why this need for Boylan and the staff, I guess. I guess I throw them on the bus too, right? I don't know. To not play these guys more minutes and treat them like they're like 40-year-old players. That is like, why am I playing 21 minutes a game? First of all, that is probably tired of losing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then second of all, he's like, if I'm losing, can I at least play to contribute a little more? Can I at least be more part of the offense or whatever? I don't know what that is supposed to do a little more. He pretty much is doing the same thing he's done on other teams, except in less minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen Thaddeus have really good games, consistent games, like games where like he's played like kind of like that borderline really good player that could maybe one day be an all-star kind of player. So I've seen him take over games in spurts. He could do that. He has yet to kind of do that in Chicago, and I think that's because he doesn't play enough minutes. And he sees this team with a bad record, and he's like, these players aren't that much better than me. Why the hell could I not get minutes?
Well, and why couldn't they throw him into the starting lineup right now? Like, I get it, Chris Dunn, he's actually been playing pretty well, but I don't know. He was playing pretty well with that second unit. Why not try to give Thaddeus some at the three? We know he can play it. Why not try it out?
Man, look, at this point, you try anything. You try Kobe starting. You maybe start Gafford. I don't care. Like, you're 9 wins. Like, you're not going to – like, you're not – like, what are you playing for? I mean, granted, I don't know how many guys games out the playoffs, maybe 2 or 3, whatever. But
yeah.
get real. Like, you're not playing for anything, really. You're playing for your young players to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm all for changing up the lineup. And I'm not beholden to anything there on the floor. You know, bench Lauri Markkanen. Now, it's interesting. I do give Boylan this credit, is that he did bench Lauri Markkanen a bunch of times during the game, during the season. Now, I don't know if it's because there's no injuries we don't know about, but like he got benched against LA on the bench in the fourth quarter a handful of times because he sucked. And so I give him credit for that. But it's funny, after the game, though, he didn't say he benched the player. It was always like something like, oh, the people I had on the floor were going well. So I stuck with Thaddeus Young, you know, because he's playing. But I'm like, wait a minute. This is the coach, this hard-nosed coach. That say it like it is, and now he's like cushioning, his rationale of why he, you know, benched a player in the fourth quarter like numerous amount of times. Why is he becoming all soft now and protecting these players when beforehand it was the opposite? Like, and like to say, yeah, Lauri got benched because he wasn't playing well, and I put with Thaddeus. You didn't get that. He just got some, you know, talking about the issue kind of response and answer to it. And I'm like, that's not real, man.
Although he's been pretty consistent with benching Lauri even when he's having a good game. Like, I feel like that's where I've just been scratching my head. Like, there's been games where he's been shooting the ball well, and he'll be on the bench for like 7-8 straight minutes. Like, just freaking stagger the lineup a little bit, man. Like, I'd like to actually see a lineup, and we saw it a little bit against Atlanta, where you have Thad Young and Lauri Markkanen on the floor. Actually, I think it helps balance it out a little bit better defensively.
Yeah, and also, I think Thaddeus would love to have, like, this offense seems to lack someone being featured in the offense. And if Thaddeus is saying, please give me more plays for me, I'm down for that. You know what I'm saying? I'm down for, you know, actually running more plays, Lauri Markkanen and LaVine. But that he seems like to get his scoring opportunities within the offense was okay. But I think he's saying I could be featured a little bit. I could post up a little bit. I'm like a 7-foot-2 Lauri Markkanen. I could do those things a little more. If you play me more minutes I'll play more consistently because I'll be on the floor more often and be more engaged into the game. So I think that's what he wants. He's not playing a lot of minutes. He doesn't feel engaged in the game. He doesn't feel like he could really provide the team what he ultimately can do, because he's not given the proper opportunity to on a team that's losing. And that's, he's like, why? Play me more minutes, fish me a little bit, I can help out a little bit. And try it, I don't care. Put him in the line with anybody, I don't care. You won 9 games, who cares? Like, start Kobe, I don't care. Start Gafford, I don't care. You seen him pull Gafford. Gafford had good games. And just pull him I'm like, what's going on? Why did you pull him? He's like 20. Is he how old is Gavin? 20? He can run the whole floor the whole game. Like, you know, I don't know.
The guy's like loaded with energy, and yeah, I mean, there's just been some weird moments like that, and I wanted to get your thoughts on another thing as we kind of like wrap up here on the conversation. So this week at the UC, we saw one of the smallest crowds at the United Center against the Raptors. It was the second smallest crowd it turned out to be in the history of the United Center. And we saw a pretty small crowd, just a little over 15,000 against the Atlanta Hawks. Do you get the sense apathy starting to set in with the fan base a bit?
Absolutely. And I think you're losing some of the fans, you know, from the, you know, 90 fan, you know, my generation. Those guys are being lost with this team. And the younger fans who grew up watching the Bulls have watched a losing Bulls team. So you don't have a lot of carryover effect. From the past generation, they don't have that, you know, that Bulls aura, that build, that Bulls quite, that Bulls love, mm-hmm. that we have, you know, those great memories of winning championships and then D Rose, you know, that's kind of going by the wayside, you know, that's in the past now. You have to grow new fans, and you grow new fans by winning. And it's sad because Chicago, for years, 20,000 fans in the seats and all this stuff. Like, it was always number one, number two. It was unbelievable. I was like, wow, this Chicago was just always show up. No matter what happened, you knew the Bulls fans were going to show up. And the fact that they're not showing up now, and numbers probably being a little deflated about the people who are actually in the seats, it's bad. I had a sense of pride as a Bulls fan that Chicago showed up for basketball games. But a certain amount of time, though, you have to feel like you're being insulted, you know, about mm-hmm. paying money to see a team in which you, your GM and your front office had like, what, 8-7 coaches or whatever, and constantly losing over and over again. You have to give them a reason and give these new fans a reason to show up to the basketball game. You just do. Mm-hmm. And with this regime in the front office, I think a lot of people are just tired. They're tired of the same old thing, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe it's time for a fresh start, a new, you know, young front office of a new head coach. You earn some points there. You earn a little grace period, the honeymoon period, where there's positive, there's enthusiasm, optimism, you know, because because you're hopeful as a fan. You need that. And sometimes that little burst of energy may be worth the cost of losing what you had in the past. And they may have to do that.
I try not to bring up other Chicago sports too much in this podcast because a lot of Bulls fans are it's a global, you know, entity. It's not just a Chicago entity. But I'm curious, where do your allegiances lie for baseball?
Oh, so Sox. I like both teams. So
okay.
I'm from the South Side, so Sox all the way. I went to De La Salle High School. Just right across the street from my high school.
Yeah.
So Sox fan. But so, I like both teams. So okay. I'm both teams, but you know, I'm Sox. I gotta roll the Sox, man. I'm going so, with them often.
So Reinsdorf owns both teams, and there are so many similarities to how both those teams are run, and there's like a similar narrative. Like right now, we have baseball's winter meetings going on, and the narrative right now is, well, the Sox were saying they're willing to spend money, but it looks like they're going to do it on Jerry Reinsdorf's terms. You know, they're not going to go all in necessarily. It's just whatever Jerry's comfortable doing, and he's going to dictate how he wants to do it. And I almost feel like that, you know, it's the same here with the Bulls, that the reason we're at this point is because they're doing it Jerry's way, and Jerry's way is very loyal. And that's why we still have this same management group after 16 years without a title to prove why they should still be here, you know? And I wonder how that is because, you know, you, as a Sox fan, it must be equally frustrating. You're kind of watching both those franchises mirror each other.
Yeah, they do mirror each other. And that's Reinsdorf loves loyalty. I mean, he loves sticking with guys that – and he trusts, and it's known, it's obvious that he doesn't like a lot of change. Yes, I guess he has an inner circle of people he works with in the front office of both organizations on both teams. You know, I hear over the years, I'm pretty sure you heard about how much of a family John Paxson and Gar are, and all the people are with Ryan Storff and their wife, and they're all friends. And Paxson pretends like he's going to get fired one day, but he knows that he's not going to get fired because otherwise he'd be mad at, you know, whatever. You know, it ain't going to happen. Kenny Williams, what, did he took out a loan from Jerry Reinstorff to, like, buy a condo or something? Like, okay. So, obviously, there's a sense of loyalty there. And it's and also, you know, he's, you know, the assumption is that he still has a lot of, he's an older guy. I don't know how old Jerry, was it 75? How old is Jerry?
He's in his 80s.
So it was not like he's, like, 40, rich, and could, like, and knows he has another 40 years to win championships. You know, it seems to be short term for him in a way. So I think if he has a huge turnover in front of the front office, he knows that it's a whole new relationship he has to establish if he wants to continue to do things the way he's run. He's going to have to establish long relationships again and earn that trust. And I don't think he's willing to do that. And, you know, I'm pretty sure his son probably does the same thing or is getting instructions or whatnot. Because I don't know how many coaches you could have. You know, and Rostow spends money when he spends money sometimes. He does spend money sometimes. But I think you're right. It's more of that unwillingness to part ways with people that you've known for years and you have a relationship for years. You know, for at the cost of winning.
Yeah, and you do hear this a lot, and we're hearing a lot right now with the winter meetings going on, that he's itching to win now. Like, he's itching to get to that point with the White Sox. And, you know, I almost feel like sometimes the Bulls, though, end up being a redheaded stepchild, where the Bulls generate the money that he can use for baseball operations. I've also had that sort of anger over my lifetime.
That's true. Rostro has admitted plenty of time he loves baseball more than basketball. That doesn't mean he doesn't care about basketball. But if he had a choice, he would rather win a World Series again than win another championship with the Bulls. Mm-hmm. That's Reinstorff. You know, that's, you know, all power to him. He's rich. He has a lot of stake in these companies, organizations. And if he likes baseball more, he likes baseball more. Mm-hmm. You know? But the Bulls have drafted well most times. They have spent some money, some unwisely. You know, there'll be years that didn't spend a lot of money, but, you know, you could argue would it have been worth it or not, whatever. But I think mostly it's the bad choices for the Bulls as far as coaching and like we just reiterated, the unwillingness to part ways with people that you know personally and you have a personal relationship with.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of end on this. So there was the report a few weeks ago also from Joe Colley of the Chicago Sun-Times. So again, we're never sure if it's absolutely 100% accurate. But I'm not trying to throw Joe Colley under the bus, but, you know, there's a checkered history there, especially against Gar Forman. And he put a report out about Jerry being upset about this bad start to the season for the Bulls and that he was focusing his attention on Gar. Do you really think, though, that firing Gar Forman really solves anything when you still have Pax, you still have Doug Collins around, you might still have Jim Boylan around? Like, does it really solve anything to offer up Gar Forman as the scapegoat in this case?
Well, is Doug Collins still around? I thought he was sick. Is he still around doing stuff for the Bulls?
Yeah, that I have no idea. Like, you know, you still hear about him through Cowley the most. And, like, I've seen KC throwing around some, like, oh, hey, you know, Doug was around the Advocate Center today, you know, yucking it up with Jim Boylan, but, like, not as much as maybe a couple years ago.
Yeah, so I think a GM is important. So, yes, it'd be nice to get rid of Paxton, too, and clean the house totally. But, you know, having a GM be removed is a big deal, because if it wasn't a big deal, we would be bitching about him for, like, the past 6 years, whatever. So it's a big deal. What you worry about is what we talked about before, is hiring people by not doing your due diligence and doing maybe a search and hiring people that that you're close friends to with, and that's in your inner circle, and that's not willing to shake things up, so to speak, and you get sort of a retread of what you had before. You know, so it may be important to get rid of more than one person to sort of start anew versus having someone there who may feel less empowered because you know the dynamics between Paxson and Reinsdorf, right? And you in the middle of that, you don't. How much power do you have in that? If Paxson wants something, you're not going to like overstep Paxson because he's boys with the owner. Mm. So like, that's what I think is incumbent upon the Bulls to Reinsdorf to clean house totally. But new GM is always fun. It's not gonna hurt the Bulls too much. Be interesting to get a fresh voice, someone who doesn't hide and talk, you know, outside of both their mouths and is not buddies with his boss's wife and all that kind of stuff. It'd be nice to have something different, something fresh. But I don't think you get the same kind of optimism from the fans that we talked about before if you were to clean house. Hmm. But what GM, like who's the hot GM now? I don't know. You know any names out there that you know or heard of? Is it ex NBA player? Like, you know, you got Brandon in Philadelphia.
There's like a couple big names, like Trajan Langdon, the former Duke player. He's with a front office somewhere. I forgot where he's at right now.
It'll come to me probably like after the podcast. Maybe Orlando? He's
one of those franchises. I'll look it up as we're talking here, but he's always been like a hot name the last couple of years. There's Danny Ainge's right-hand man in Boston, although a lot of people think he wants to stay there. I mean, it's always you always hear some names coming out of the big franchises in basketball, like San Antonio, Boston. There's probably going to be guys around the Nets this year. You know what wouldn't surprise me? If after the season, if Gar Forman does get fired, that all of a sudden we have a press conference and you hear, ladies and gentlemen, your new Bulls GM, Will Perdue. I could totally see that kind of move coming. I totally could. Totally could. Totally.
It'll be Kirk Heimer before Will Perdue any day. I wouldn't be surprised if John Paxson coached the team and hires Kirk as his assistant and then Kirk coached the team.
They had a falling out. You know, they had a falling out over the last trade that happened. Do you remember when the Fred Hoiberg's first season, they traded Kirk at the deadline, and he was not happy about that.
Kirk Heimer, right? I mean, he deserved two montages doing a halftime show. That is the most fucking ridiculous thing in my I lost my mind. One was black and white. How did he deserve two montages? He's done nothing.
Yeah.
Really? I don't want to get to Kirk Heimer. We got to Kirk Heimer enough over the years, but... Okay, but some, I think you're right. Some of that flavor, right? You can see, again, one of the boys, it's okay, and that's okay to keep. I guess as Bulls players, you know, we talk about a lot. The Bulls don't help out the old, you know, their own whatever, which is kind of untrue in a way. But yeah, if that wouldn't happen, you wouldn't be surprised that it was like a former NBA Bulls a player that paid for the Bulls a lot of years. You know, and they feel comfortable with, you know, because they had to fit in. You know, I don't want to fit in. I want to blow up and then create a new puzzle.
I want to see somebody from the outside. Like, it would be so nice to just see some new set of eyes that hasn't been associated with the organization. And it probably won't happen, but it would be nice to see just somebody with a fresh perspective come in and really evaluate everything from top to bottom.
Yes, absolutely. And how many times can you have Paxson go home and hire a coach? Like, how many coaches do you get? Like, seriously, that's just how many misses do you get for coaches? Like, this one's going to get fired pretty soon. Like, you can't continue to lose like this. You can lose, but you can't lose. Like, and they're losing.
Well, I wanted to point out one thing. We were talking about Trajan Langdon real quick. And I feel really old because I remember when he was a player at Duke. Yeah, he was an assistant GM. He was with Brooklyn until this past offseason. He got hired as the GM of the Pelicans. So he's working under David Griffin over there.
Oh, okay.
It wouldn't surprise me, like, tapping into those franchises for somebody if they want to step outside the box.
Yeah, I think everyone's picking apart Brooklyn. The shiny new thing. Everyone's picking apart trying to grab all the talent like we did, of course, from there. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know who it'll be, but if you fire the GM, you got to fire the coach, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't. he put together the team, or the front, you know, him and Paxton, and someone has to take the fall for it. And I think it's about time. It's becoming embarrassing, you know, the league, the players, NBA, you know, NBA talk around the league. Is becoming embarrassing, you know. Even Larry Marketing, who got talked trash to, it's like, you know, being called a bum on the court, and they're not really responding. It's like, well, really?
How about Jabari Parker? Let's end on this one. How about Jabari Parker basically saying that the Bulls have no credibility anymore amongst players that are from Chicago? Like that right there is to me all you need to know about the perception of the team around the league. And I'm not a huge Jabari guy.
Yeah, I don't know if Jabari could speak for everyone, all Chicago basketball players in the NBA, but the fact that he said that, no, means there's some kind of, you know, string of truth to be pulled there from that statement. But string of truth to be pulled. That sound cool? String of truth to be pulled.
It sounds poetic. I like
Does it.
Does it? Yeah, I think it sounds poetic. Look, this is it's a sports podcast.
I mean, that's as poetic as you're going to get.
But yeah, you know, of course, Anthony Davis comes to Chicago. Every time at NBA, you know, Chicago comes to Chicago, you know, we got to talk about how great Chicago is about some player as a basketball city, and like, you know, and are they going to play in Chicago when they're free agent and all this kind of stuff. But it's just the Bulls are losing their aura they had. Like, it's gone. You know, these players are three generations past. You know, it's just the mystique is gone, you know. And it's unfortunate, and it's definitely gone when a fan base doesn't show up. Because generally, opponents used to know, all right, when I come to Chicago, and over the years, you heard this from players, right? They'll say, well, come to Chicago, I know I'm going to play in front of a large crowd. That was always a thing the other players would say. I come to Chicago, no matter how good the team is, the fans will come out, I'm going to play in front of a large crowd. Now you're becoming like the also-ran teams, you know, the old days, Sacramento teams, and then and Charlotte, you know, or Atlanta or whatever. You don't want to become that. My goodness, you can't have that in Chicago, the second largest market. We can't have that. You got to do something.
And the fans that do show up there, it's such a flat crowd. Like, you can, every time you watch the games on TV, like, the energy that was there even like 5-6 years ago is completely zapped. Like, it's so... Everybody that's there seems so dejected, or they're a bunch of just, you know, people there on business. That's what it feels like when you're watching games now.
Yeah, both. It's been flat for a couple of years. I've been, you know, went to the game this year. I went to the game earlier this year. Before then, I hadn't been to a Bulls game in a couple of years. I used to go to a handful, maybe three or four. And it would be kind of flat in general over the last few years. But you're right, man, because, like, there's nothing to cheer for. You don't see a positive future. You don't see anything down the road to cheer for. So, and when you're seeing the records play over and over again with the same front office, you pretty much know what you're going to get. And you heard a record 10,000 times, you're tired of it, you're tired of the song, you like the song at first, and then now you hate it. And so you don't want to listen to the same song all over again for the next like 3 or 4 years. So you become numb to it, and it's like, whatever. So that's why if you clean house, you know, get a new GM, new president or whatever, and really make a change, make a pivot, you could really bring back some fans. So,
well, I don't want to agree.
I don't want the Bulls to be just the stadium's empty. We never had that in Chicago. Like, come on, man, let's fix this.
Absolutely. And you know what, though? What I appreciate, though, is today on this podcast, you brought a lot of grit, a lot of spirit, and you know, you represented the Bulls across the chest
today during this podcast.
So I appreciate you bringing that spirit and that grit today, C-Dub. Thank you so much for coming on. And we're going to make sure we bring you back on again so that you can join the Three Timers Club with Big Dave.
Woo! Big Dave level.
The Rebuildable Hall of Fame.
Yeah, behind that big shadow Big Dave cast. One day I will get out. Nah, I don't know, man.
Now you're your own man, C Dub. You're your own man.
Don't worry about that. You're fine.
All right, man. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it, and I want to be part of the Fat Tire Club.
Wait. Okay, let's get to three, then we'll get to five. We got a long way to go. We don't know if the podcast will still be around.
Oh, come on, it'll be around. It'll be around because you have me and Big Dave on every year, every 2 weeks. That's why I'll be around. No,
I'm just gonna ride. I'm gonna ride the coattails of the Ball on Bulls podcast.
Yeah, jump on board, man.
All right, thanks again, C-Dub.
All right, man, you take care. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Rebuildable Podcast. Be sure to check out more episodes on Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Rebuildable.com.